Oh my God.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jeanette.
And I'm Emily. And I'm mad at our computer.
It's okay. Honestly, we're only 16 minutes behind where we said we would record. So,
been a lot worse. Yes.
16 minutes of technical difficulties. It's not too bad. We definitely have been in a worse situation. So.
Oh, we definitely have. Yes. And more recently too. Like, yeah.
That is very true. How's your week been, Emily?
Okay. I had like a really big assignment for class. That's like all I've been thinking about. But yeah. What about you?
That's fair. Honestly, I mean, just work in school, but like I don't have any crazy big assignments yet. Like, okay. I know it's towards the end of the semester, but I feel like I haven't really gotten anything like crazy big yet. I've had a speech due, but like that's not. I feel like I'm so used to speeches; they're not even like a big assignment anymore. It's just like, oh yeah.
You are a communications major. So.
That is very true. It's something we're doing a lot of.
Yes.
But yeah. I'm trying to... Ooh, Figgy's birthday. My cat, Figaro, her birthday is going to be on the 25th.
I'm so excited.
I know. She's going to be 1 year old.
Wow. 1 year. Aw, yay.
1 year. Yeah, she's going to be a year old. And I got her a little, like, a wet food cake. I know.
That's adorable.
Take a lot of pictures so you can be a part of it.
Please do. I will FaceTime in.
Honestly, please do.
I don't think. Our cat's birthday is in 1 month, so...
Oh,
soon he will be 3. He's old.
Wait, Zeno?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
I feel like you just got him yesterday.
I know, me too. He's glaring at me from the bedroom. Hi, bud. Okay. Well, we have kind of a big case today.
All right, let's get into it.
Yes. So
that's
this one,
what she did right before we joined. Sorry, but the people need to know that you said let's get sad right before we hit record.
I sure did. So, today we are going to be talking about Sylvia Likens. Have you heard of this case before?
No, I have not.
Okay, there is actually a movie that was about the case. It was called An American Crime. It was made in 2007, so it's kind of like an older movie. But it has Elliot Page, who actually stars as Sylvia Likens. So this is one of the worst cases like I have ever read about or researched. So.
Oh, no. That's not good.
This one reminds me a lot of the Cleveland abductions. So that kind of says something.
I didn't even like that one.
Well, I would hope you didn't like that one. let's get started. So we are going to first start talking about Gertrude Van Fossen. So,
okay.
So she was born in 1929. She was the third of 6 children. So there is not much that is known about her childhood, but it is known that she is very close with her father and did not have the best relationship with her mother. So not a lot is known about her childhood, but based off of the things that she does, it was not a very good childhood. Like, it seems like there's no way that she had a healthy upbringing and this still happened, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we're dealing with today. So her father died whenever she was 11 years old, so in the year 1940. So she had actually witnessed her dad dying. It was from a heart attack. So whenever she was 16 years old, she dropped out of school and she married the 18-year-old. His name is John Banaszewski. I really hope I'm pronouncing that right. So he didn't really, like, he was a police officer. That's what his job was. He was 18 years old, and she dropped out to marry him. And however, this guy had a very bad temper and would just start beating her because, quote unquote, she was annoying him.
No!
So, yeah. So they ended up having four children together. So the four children that they had together were Paula, Stephanie, John, and Marie. So they got divorced after 10 years of being together. So at this point, she was 26, and she got sole custody over the kids. So at this point, she met Edward Guthrie, and they were only together for a couple of months, and then they got divorced again, or her and Edward got divorced. So at this point, she ended back up with John, and they had two more children. And then they got divorced again in 1963.
Wow, a roller coaster.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh, there's more. Hold on. So they got divorced again. And then she had an affair with a guy named Dennis Lee Wright. He was 23 years old, and she moved in with him. So she was like, she wasn't young at the time. So this was totally like a, like, he was a lot younger than her situation. So she moved in with him. And he further abused her. So, yeah. after this, she got pregnant. And then she had a miscarriage. But then she did get pregnant again. And so she gave birth to Dennis Lee Wright Jr. So right after she gave birth, Dennis just straight up left. So at this point, she filed a paternity suit. But it did not go as well as she would have hoped. So she was raising seven children on her own. So money was a little tight. And at this point, she did want to continue going, or not continue going by. She wanted to go by Mrs. Wright. That way she could keep her respectability, like, throughout town. So people would think that she was married and not unmarried with the seven children. So the children that we are going to be talking about, like her children, there are seven of them, is Paula, who was 17 at the time, Stephanie, who was 15, John was 12, Marie was 11, Shirley was 10, James was 8, and Dennis Lee Wright Jr. was like 1. He was young. He was a, oh my, you know, gosh, a baby.
A baby baby.
A baby. So now let's talk about Sylvia Likens. So Sylvia Likens was born to Lester Cecil Likens and Elizabeth Francis, who went by Betty. So she was actually born in between two sets of fraternal twins, which is very interesting to me. And one of her younger sisters, who was, you know, one of the fraternal twins, her name is Jenny. So Jenny, who was her younger sister, she actually had suffered from polio as a young child, and she had to wear like a leg brace, and she just wasn't doing too well. So her family worked in the carnival. So for the carnival, they would just like sell snacks and stuff. That wasn't, yeah, that was basically just their job.
Okay.
So, Sylvia would try to like work odd jobs out to help her family because, you know, it's her family. However, unfortunately, July 3rd, Sylvia's mom was arrested for shoplifting and she went to jail. So at this point, money was very hard for them because, well, it was like a traveling carnival, like they weren't working right now. And so the dad tried to find boarding for the girls, Jenny and Sylvia, because he didn't feel comfortable with them joining this carnival circuit. However, he did take, well, their oldest child, her name was Olivia. I believe her name was Olivia. She actually, she plays a part later, but she was actually married at the time. So, you know, she was just off doing her own thing. and the two sons went with them for the carnival circuit. So Jenny and Sylvia, he was trying to find boarding for them. That was a very long way for me to say that. I'm making sure you know all the facts. So, Sylvia had actually met Stephanie in her school. So, if you remember, Stephanie was one of Gertrude's children. Stephanie was about 15 at the time. And Gertrude and her dad actually came to an agreement. So Sylvia said that he would send her family $20 a week in order to watch both Jenny and Sylvia. So Gertrude, who was, you know, she was like having some issues with money. This was like great news for her. This was a really easy way to start making money. So she obviously took them up on this. So at first, things went pretty well. Like, she treated them fairly, all that kind of fun stuff. However, then Sylvia's father, like, kind of stopped sending the $20 a week. And this made Gertrude very angry. And so she began to take out her anger on Jenny and Sylvia.
No.
So she often would throw like tantrums and she would scream at them, quote unquote, "I took care of you two bitches for nothing," before having them lie down across the bed with their skirts and underwear around their ankles, and she would beat them with a paddle. So, shortly after all of this started, Lester and Elizabeth, or she went by Betty too, they came into town to check on them, and neither of them made any reference to the beatings, and it was presumably because they were under the threat of her. So, about this time, Sylvia and Jenny went through the neighborhood garbage and they collected old Coca-Cola bottles to sell in order to get money for candy. When they came home with the candy, Gertrude accused them of stealing. And when Sylvia explained how they had gotten the money, she accused her of lying and made her, like, she swatted her with the paddle some more.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So, at this point, Paula, who was 17, got very jealous of, like, Sylvia because of her looks. So the main reason that she got jealous of her because of this is because she was pregnant at the time by a married middle-aged man. Yeah, she was 17 at the time and she was pregnant. So,
oh my gosh.
Oh, don't worry. She sucks. You don't feel bad for her.
Okay, okay.
No. She is terrible. Don't even worry. So,
well, now I am worried.
Oh, worry for others. Don't worry for Paula. She is okay. Garbage. And this story, unfortunately, doesn't have a happy ending, by the way. So, I guess, spoiler.
Why do you make me want to cry?
I did not want to talk about this case, like, at all. But I feel like this case is important because it shows, like, how terrible human beings can be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I know, still. It's still, yeah.
Yeah.
So, shortly after her getting accused of stealing the candy, they went to a church social event, and the children, namely Paula, told Gertrude that they were disgusted with the amount of food that Sylvia was eating. And so Gertrude told Sylvia that she was angry with her and wanted to do something to ruin her physical appearance. So she forced her to eat a hot dog that was completely covered in condiments, like disgustingly covered. And she threw it up. And whenever she threw it up, she forced her to eat it again.
Ew! What?
Yeah. So, again, soon after this, both Betty and Lester came back into town, and per her instructions, she made no reference to this happening.
Ugh.
So,
that is disgusting.
It's terrible. Everything in this case is so awful. So, at this point, she basically began to torture Sylvia. So She overheard Sylvia, Gertrude overheard Sylvia remark that she had once, like, laid kind of, like, in bed with a boy. Like, literally, like, laid in bed with a boy. Mm-hmm. And she accused her of being a prostitute. And then she informed the rest of the house that Sylvia was pregnant because of this. And at this point, she attacked Sylvia and repeatedly kicked her in the genitals. And when Sylvia attempted to sit down, Paula threw her out of the chair and informed her, "You ain't fit to sit in chairs."
What does that even mean?
I wish I could tell you. I don't know. So from this point, Sylvia was only allowed to sit in a chair with permission.
And that is so sad.
It is so sad. So Gertrude then began allowing her older children to use Sylvia as like a toy, basically. And she would like allow them to beat up Sylvia and like push her down the stairs like she was some kind of toy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, there is a lot of like theories as to why Gertrude did all of this, but a lot of what like the main consensus is that this was all happening because she was just jealous of her, because she was young and she was pretty, and therefore that's definitely what she deserves. Oh, I hate saying that. That's obviously not true. But that's like one of the theories as to why that was it. Right. Some other theories include that because she was abused so much, she directed her rage at Sylvia. And this is just going to be quote-unquote this part. Whatever the case, Vanazuski manifested this rage by justifying her attacks by accusing Lykins of being a prostitute and delivering bizarre sermons to her children and Sylvia about the filthiness of prostitutes and women in general. So, the day after Gertrude kicked her in the crotch, Sylvia and Jenny told their classmates that they had seen Paula and Stephanie having sex with boys in exchange for money. So whenever they just like started that as a rumor. So whenever Stephanie's boyfriend, his name is Coy Hubbard, discovered what they said, he came to their house and beat Sylvia. And from then on, he would continue to go to the Banaszewski house, and he would, he would, like, practice his, like, kung fu on Sylvia, basically.
Oh my gosh.
So Gertrude got Anna Sisko, who was one of Sylvia's best friends, alone, and she told her that Sylvia had been telling boys at school that Anna's mother was a whore. So, Gertrude took Anna to see Sylvia, and she directed her to violently attack her, basically. And soon after, Gertrude told one of Paula's friends, a girl named Judy Duke, that Sylvia had been spreading rumors about her mother, and pitted them against each other to fight, basically. And during which, Gertrude instructed Jenny to punch Sylvia, Jenny, you know, her younger sister. And when she refused, Gertrude began to beat her in the face with her fists until Jenny finally agreed to punch Sylvia.
Oh my God.
So obviously
this is so sad.
It is so sad. On the August of 1965, there was a vacant house was purchased next door, and it was a couple named Phyllis and Raymond Vermillion. So Phyllis saw the number of children that Gertrude cared for and believed that she would make a good babysitter. And so, like, a good babysitter for her two children. And so she was hoping to pay them by doing that. So they arranged a backyard barbecue so that the two families could get to know each other. And during the barbecue, Phyllis had noticed that Sylvia had a pronounced black eye. And Paula proudly announced to Phyllis that she was the one who had given it to her. So, Then, under Gertrude's supervision, Paula approached Sylvia with a glass of steaming water and threw it in Sylvia's face.
No!
And neither of them reported this incident to the authorities. Like, neither of the couple, the Phyllis and Raymond, neither of them reported this. Which is so messed up, I think. Because she was walking around, this young 16-year-old walking around with a black eye, and she was bragging about how she was the one that did it, and they just were like, all right.
Like what?
Cool. Sorry?
If I heard that, I'd be like, hold on, what?
Yeah, no, I don't think I'd just be like, ah, yes, welcome to the neighborhood, thanks.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable, by the way. Well, yeah, I feel like that's obvious, but okay, so about this time, Phyllis did witness Paula beat Sylvia, and Sylvia came home from school and, that's a totally different sentence. So then Sylvia had come home from school and had told Gertrude that she needed a sweatsuit for gym class. And Gertrude told Sylvia that she couldn't afford one. And so Sylvia just ended up stealing one from the school. So she ended up questioning her about her new gym outfit, and she ended up telling her that she stole it. So she segued this conversation to Sylvia being a prostitute, apparently. And then she threw her on the ground and repeatedly kicked her in the genitals before once more returning to the topic of her being a theft. She then burned the tips of each of Sylvia's fingers with a lit cigarette, saying it would help her cure her sticky fingers.
What?
Yeah. After this, she made her bend over while she whipped her with a belt. And after this, the smokers in the family began to put out their cigarettes on Sylvia as a reminder for her not to steal, apparently.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I have never felt so badly for someone than I do for Sylvia, honestly. That's why this case is so hard to talk about, and it unfortunately gets so much worse. But, ugh. So this next part is extremely terrifying, and so a huge trigger warning for this part. So, sometime after this, Sylvia went out again to sell old soda bottles for money again. And whenever she got home, she accused her of prostitution again.
Oh my gosh.
At this point, she took her into the living room of her home and forced her to strip naked in front of her sons and several of the neighborhood boys on the threat of beating Jenny. And once she was naked, she forced Sylvia to assault herself with a Coca-Cola bottle. Yeah.
Yeah. Why does it feel like the whole neighborhood is in on this?
It's because they basically were, and I don't understand. Like, what kind of people were just like, yeah, this is normal.
Like,
I'm going to watch this.
One person.
Yeah, basically
in the neighborhood
not.
That's
no.
Like, this is not correct.
Yeah, basically, no.
That
no,
is
they.
So sad.
It's sick and disgusting, and yeah. Yeah. So. After this, Sylvia became incontinent as a result, and so Gertrude decided that she was no longer fit to live with humans, okay?
What?
And so she locked her in the basement. So, because of this, because of the incident with the bottle, she had, some bladder issues. And the lack of the toilet forced her to defecate and urinate on the floor, which is horrifying. And whenever she saw this, Gertrude, she would, punish her for this. And she would cleanse, quote unquote, Sylvia and for being a dirty girl, apparently.
Ew.
So the bath time was Gertrude's claw-footed bathtub, which was filled with scalding hot water. And then they bound Sylvia's wrists and ankles, and then they dunked her into it.
No.
So this was administered once or many times a day because, well, she had to go to the bathroom. What the hell else was she supposed to do? Oh, I hate this part. And then following the baths, Paula would rub handfuls of salt over Sylvia's body. So after burning her, would rub salt, literally salt in an open wound. Yeah.
Why?
Mm-hmm. So during this period, Gertrude took on 14-year-old Ricky Hobbs as her personal assistant when dealing with Sylvia. So she, like, wanted someone else to come help torture Sylvia.
The heck? That mm-hmm. is so sick.
It's so sick. So he, like, he, you know, had no problem with this. And... sorry. He came from, like, he was an honor student from, like, a middle-class family with no previous legal trouble. He experienced a sudden shift in personality upon becoming the assistant and blindly followed whatever orders she gave him. So crime reporters have speculated that that he was her lover and that she had seduced him into becoming her henchman. Sick. Absolutely sick.
Because this is making my tummy hurt.
Yeah, so this was 1965. She was born in 1929, and he was 14. So, yeah. So, at this point, all of her children, I'm assuming other than the one-year-old child, decided to turn Sylvia into, like, they could make some money off of her, right? Like, make some money. So they would start charging the neighborhood children a nickel to come gawk at the nude Sylvia. That's what it says here in my notes. Or to push her down the stairs to the basement where she was now kept when not being bathed or put on display. So she was constantly kept naked and she was rarely fed. And when she was allowed to eat, it was, like, in some weird way. Like, for instance, she would insist that she eat soup with her fingers.
What?
Mm-hmm. This next part, I'm just not going to read it. If you want, I have it in my notes, but I don't want to read this. So if you, I am leaving some parts out in the story. If you want to go read more about it, you feel free to. It's a terrifying case. I'll tell you, but I don't want to say it on here because it's going to make me uncomfortable.
Okay.
If you would like to look it up, definitely feel free. I mean, I'm saying that like I'm not insanely uncomfortable because of how badly I feel, but you know.
Right.
Okay. So, around this next period, like after they started making money off of her, Jenny managed to send contact to their older sister, Diana, who was married and had a family of her own. And Jenny, like, basically told her about the horrors that they were facing and instructed Diana to contact the police to come rescue them. However, Diana just ignored the letter and believed that Jenny was simply displeased with being punished and that she was making up stories so she could come live with her. If my little sister were to ever send me anything like this, she could come stay with me in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Like, I don't understand. I mean, it's possible that she fully was just like, yeah, I don't believe this is happening. I think you're just, like, upset about this. But, like, if she's going into this much detail and explaining, like, all of this stuff, I would think that that sounds like grounds to, you know, at least check in on the family, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So about this time, one of the neighborhood children who had come by to see Sylvia, Judy Duke, went home and told her mother that they were beating and kicking Sylvia. And the girl's mother replied with, that was what happened when someone was punished. What kind of place is this? What the hell is happening in this neighborhood?
Like, no, I don't honestly, understand. It sounds like a whole, like, it sounds like a different, like, dimension. Like, yes. Where this is okay. Like, I'm just so confused.
I don't. Oh, okay. People are terrible. Absolutely terrible. So, shortly after this happened, Gertrude's Reverend Roy Julian started to visit, like, all of his people's homes to, like, see how they live. And so he and Gertrude drank coffee, and she was complaining to him that Sylvia was an intense burden on her and claimed that she was a prostitute who had been servicing married men and had gotten pregnant. However, keep in mind, at this time, Paula is several months pregnant. However, Gertrude insisted that her daughter was a virgin and that Sylvia was attempting to pass off her own misdeeds onto pure Paula.
What?
So Gertrude and the Reverend prayed for Sylvia's salvation before he left. And then he returned a few weeks later. And Paula told the Reverend during prayers that she had hatred in her heart for Sylvia. To which Gertrude said the opposite was true. So after this, Diana came by to visit her sisters, you know, thank God. But she refused to allow her into the house. Gertrude refused to allow her into the home. And she told her that this was because Lester, their father, had contacted her and instructed her not to allow Diana into the home. So Diana questioned this. And Gertrude threatened to call the police and have her arrested for trespassing. And Diana hid nearby until she spotted Jenny outside and then approached her. So Jenny told the older sister that she was not allowed to talk to her and ran away. So, you know, concerned by this, Diana contacted social services. And when a social worker, Gertrude informed her that she had kicked Sylvia out of the house for becoming physically unclean and a prostitute, and Sylvia had run away. So Gertrude managed to get Jenny alone long enough to inform her that she had told the social worker the truth. Jenny would join her sister naked in the basement. Jenny's a child. Keep that in mind. She is a child. So Jenny told the social worker that Sylvia had indeed run away, and the social worker returned to her office where she filed a report stating that no more calls needed to be made to their home. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Why would the social worker not want to go inside?
Like, I don't know. I'm very confused by that.
And by everything I've read that this, like, this house was absolutely dirty and, like, disgusting and terrible. But he, like, if you would have had one look in that house, I bet you they would have been like, yeah, no, we're going to come in. Like, I'm worried for your own children, too. Like, you have a one-year-old child. Like, I don't think this is good. Like, why would they not want to go in? Or, like, check. I mean, I don't think they were doubting her that she ran away, but, like, would they have gone in?
Oh, my gosh. This is horrible.
It's horrible.
This is so bad.
Yeah. Again, we're uncomfortable laughing, not laughing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Oh, my gosh.
Ugh. Okay.
So, I really don't understand that.
Something about this case, it's, like, hard for me to process in my head that this is something that happened, you know? Just yeah. Because it is so horrible and disgusting. I don't want it to be real. I think my brain tries to tell me, like, no, this isn't real. Yeah, it's like, real and it's like terrible. That
can't happen, right? Like,
people are terrible.
That's what, like, I'm thinking, like, how is this even possible?
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to get basically a whole neighborhood just to, like, beat and torture this girl? What?
Girl who did nothing wrong.
Exactly. Like,
nothing. She has not done a single thing wrong. I mean, she spread a rumor. What? I don't think that constitutes
anything. No, not
at all. That's happening. Nothing. Okay. This actually, it reminds me of a case that I was listening to. Morbid did an episode on them. It's called, her name was Colleen Stan, and she was called the girl in the box, and she was held captive for, like, over 7 years and basically lived in a box for almost the whole time.
That is so sad.
And it's a thing that you're like, no, that can't happen, but it happens.
Right.
And it's horrifying. So, on October 20th, Gertrude called the police to come arrest a boy at their home. And the boy was Robert Bruce Hanlon, who was a local boy who had claimed that the Banaszewski's children had stolen things from his basement. So he had come to the home earlier in the evening demanding that they return his things, but she refused, and he attempted to sneak into the home to take them back. So Phyllis, their neighbor who does nothing, witnessed Hanlon being put into the back of a squad car and approached the police to speak on his behalf. And she said she earlier overheard the argument between Gertrude and Robert over the stolen goods. Phyllis made no mention of Sylvia during her conversation with the police. That's good. That's a good sign.
That's good. That's a good sign.
Yeah, great. So on October 21st, Gertrude instructed John Jr., her son, Coy, who was Stephanie's boyfriend, and Stephanie, to bring Sylvia up from the basement and tie her to a bed, telling Sylvia that if she could hold her bladder through the night, she would be permitted to sleep upstairs again.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh. And so she went to check on her in the morning, and she discovered that she had wet the bed. And then she was forced to perform a striptease for her sons and the neighborhood boys after this.
That is so sad.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So after this was over, she was allowed to get dressed again. And after a few minutes, she brought up Sylvia's rumors about Paula and Stephanie and said, "You have branded my daughter, so I will brand you." And she was forcibly stripped naked, tied down, and gagged, while one of the children heated up a sewing needle.
Oh my God.
And a series of matches. And then they branded and carved letters into her stomach saying, "I'm a prostitute and proud of it." And it was Ricky Hobbs that did this.
Oh my God. So
yeah.
Sad.
So after this, Gertrude left the room, leaving her tied up and naked. And at this point, the 10-year-old daughter, Shirley, decided to give Sylvia another tattoo, an S in the middle of the chest. And the three would later become confused as to whether they intended the S to stand for Sylvia or slave. So Ricky began to burn the S into her, and then he either choked or changed his mind, because he then ordered Jenny to come over to carve the top half of this, and Jenny refused. And then Ricky then ordered Shirley to finish the tattoo, she was 11, by the way. Shirley was 11. And however, she, you know, was 11. She accidentally carved a 3 into her chest rather than an S.
Oh my God.
So at this point, Gertrude re-entered the room she went to Sylvia and said, "What are you going to do now, Sylvia? You can't get married now. You can't undress in front of anyone. What are you going to do now?" This is a 16-year-old child who has done nothing wrong. Nothing. So, Sylvia responded, "I guess there's nothing I can do. It's on there." So that night, Jenny actually sneaked into the basement to visit her sister, and Sylvia told her, "I'm going to die. Like, I can tell." So shortly after Jenny's visit, Gertrude inexplicably went into the basement and brought Sylvia upstairs and allowed her to sleep in one of the beds. So she was actually allowed to sleep until about noon. And on October 23rd, when Gertrude woke her, once she was awake, they took her into the bathroom to give her a warm, soapy bath. Like what? Like some kind of a, I don't know, like apology?
What the heck?
Yeah.
Like, how are they going to do all of that and then one day be like, "Oh, okay, you can actually sleep and we'll give you a nice bath."
Yeah. It's manipulative, like, as hell. It's so manipulative. So,
My tummy hurts.
I know. I'm sorry. Me too.
Emily, this is horrible.
I know. So, after this, Gertrude and Paula dressed her and then they dictated a letter to her, which was intended to look like a runaway letter to her parents. So, they needed her to write a letter to her parents. So, the letter said, "I went with a gang of boys in the middle of the night, and they said they would pay me if I give them something. So I got in the car, and they got what they wanted. And when they finished, they beat me up and left sores all over my face and body. They also put on my stomach, 'I am a prostitute, and I'm proud of it. I have done just about everything I could do just to make Gertie mad. And because Gertie, and cause Gertie more money than she's got. I've tore up a new mattress and peed on it. I have also cost Gertie doctor bills and she really can't pay and made Gertie a nervous wreck and all her kids." So, after Sylvia finished this letter, Gertrude began to formulate a plan to have John Jr. and Jenny take Sylvia to a nearby garbage dump and leave her there to die. So, Sylvia overheard this and she started to run to the door, but because of her state, she was moving so slowly and it just did not work. So, once Gertrude had settled her down, she took her into the kitchen and made her some toast, to which Sylvia tried to eat it, but she just could not swallow it. And then Gertrude took the curtain rod in the kitchen and beat Sylvia in the mouth with it. Yeah. And then John Jr. took Sylvia into the basement and tied her up while she prepared a plate of crackers for Sylvia, which she offered. And Sylvia said, "Feed it to the dog. It's hungrier than I am." To which Gertrude repeatedly punched her in the stomach and left her. All right. The next day, August 24th, she came into the basement and she attempted to hit Sylvia. First she tried to hit her with a chair, but she missed and it broke against the wall. Then she tried to beat her over the head with a paddle, but swung it too high and hit herself against her own her face. So, haha, giving her a black eye. So at this point, Hubbard stepped in and beat Sylvia unconscious with a broomstick. So over the course of that night into the morning of October 25th, Sylvia beat the basement floor with an iron shovel. And the next door neighbors would later report considering calling the police, but chose not to.
What?
Okay, look, if you are ever considering to call, like, the police or do something, just do it.
Yeah, that usually means that you should.
Yeah, this isn't usually like a, I don't know, like, maybe, like, no. I hate this case. I hate this case so much.
Me too. This is horrible.
So, at this point, this was October 26th. She voiced her intentions to give Sylvia a warm bath again. So, Stephanie and Ricky brought Sylvia upstairs and laid her in the tub fully clothed. And took her out shortly thereafter, but they realized that she wasn't breathing. So Stephanie gave Sylvia CPR, but at this point, Sylvia was already dead, unfortunately.
Why? I'm sorry. You're going to give CPR to someone that y'all are literally, what?
Oh, no, because they care about her. You forget. Oh, like, yeah. You forget how much they care. They're so nice. Yeah,
exactly. Right. Correct.
So whenever the police ended up arriving, she had told one of the kids to go to the nearby payphone and call the police. Stephanie's boyfriend. So once the police arrived, she gave them the letter that she had forced Sylvia to write. And in the midst of the commotion, Jenny Likens whispered to one of the police officers, "Get me out of here and I'll tell you everything." And this statement, combined with the police's discovery of her body in the basement, prompted the officers to arrest Gertrude, Paula, Stephanie, John, Hobbs, and Hubbard for murder. So.
Oh my God.
At least they were arrested. So, yeah. Other neighborhood children were present. It was Mike Monroe, Landy Lepper, Judy Duke and Cisco were arrested for injury to a person. So, what were you saying before? I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness. What was it? I don't know. I lost it. Sad.
If it comes back, let me know.
Oh my God, dude. This is a horrible.
So horrible.
I think so. This is one of the worst cases that, like...
ever. Yeah, no, this is a terrible, terrible case.
Oh my God.
So... Gertrude and her children, Hobbs and Hubbard, were held without bail pending their trials. The charges against Cisco, Duke, Monroe, and Lepper were dismissed, though. Stephanie's lawyer got her a separate trial, and before it was able to begin, the district attorney had dropped the murder charges for Stephanie. So, meanwhile, the autopsy of Sylvia turned up over 100 cigarette burns to her body, in addition to various third and second degree burns, severe bruising, and muscle and nerve damage. So in the case of the state of Indiana versus Gertrude and Banaszewski, the official cause of death was brain swelling and internal hemorrhaging of the brain and shock. Yeah.
I really don't.
Also, due to, like, with the autopsy, it was proven that she was not a prostitute because of the autopsy. So, the case of the state in Indiana versus Gertrude and Banaszewski, John Banaszewski, Paula Banaszewski, Ricky Hobbs, and Coy Hubbard commenced in May of 1966, and the prosecution sought for the death penalty for all of the people that were involved, including John and Hobbs, who were 13 and 14 at the time. Oh. So, I mean, I don't really agree with that. I mean, at all. I tend to have very mixed feelings about the death penalty, but I don't think a 13 and 14-year-old, you know, deserves the death.
Yeah, I think like, it, yeah.
They were shitty, but yeah. So, Paula's time in court was actually interrupted because she gave birth to a child that she and her mother both insisted that she wasn't carrying. Oh, and Paula named the child Gertrude. So isn't that lovely? Just heartwarming.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
love
right?
that.
So they were being represented by four different attorneys, all of whom worked against each other and attempted to shift the blames onto the other defendants, even though they were all being tried together. So Gertrude's attorney attempted to shift the blame onto the children, portraying her as weak, chronically ill, and incapable of preventing or perpetuating any of the abuse. Gertrude was chronically ill, but So for most of the trial against her, it was due to self-incrimination, and she recounted bizarre tales of Sylvia Likens being a neighborhood prostitute and of her trysts and middle-aged married men, as well as accusing her of frequently starting fights in the home. So to corroborate with this, the 11-year-old Marie, her kid, was called to the stand. And initially, Marie backed up everything that her mother had said until the cross-examination, in which she suddenly screamed, "God help me," before admitting everything she said was a lie, and went on to recount all of the detail about how her mother and siblings tortured and murdered Sylvia.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. So wow. This was what was largely responsible for the final verdict of them. So Gertrude was found guilty of murder in the first degree, and she did not receive the death penalty, but rather life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. So Paula was convicted of the second degree murder, but she appealed and was granted a new trial. Get this, all right? But before it began, she struck up a plea bargain and pled guilty to voluntary manslaughter, in which she served 3 years in prison and then paroled.
Oh, wow.
She served 3 years in prison. And after this, guess what? Yeah, she became a teacher.
No.
Yeah. She became a teacher. However, after this, they did find out who she was because she changed her name. They found out who she was and they were like, yeah, you can't be a teacher anymore. So that's good. I'm glad that they at least did that.
I mean, yeah, that is good.
Yeah. So John Coy and then the other one, I totally forgot his name. I mean, I don't care for this person. This person is a terrible person, so I don't really want to know anything about them. But they were all convicted of voluntary manslaughter and were sentenced to 18 months in a juvenile detention facility. So Hobbs was 17 whenever he was released, and the severity of his crimes had sunk in, and he suffered a nervous breakdown, and he began a regime of heavy chain smoking, which severely decayed his lungs by the time he was 20. And by the time he was 21, he had died of lung cancer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Gertrude appealed and was granted a new trial. However, she was guilty again, but this time she was sentenced to 18 years to life. And over the course of the next 18 years, she became a model prisoner. You know, she worked in the sewing shop and she was like a mother to the younger female inmates. And she was literally given the prison nickname Mom. I'm like so mad. So the news of the parole hearing sent shockwaves through the Indiana community. And Jenny Likens and her family appeared on TV to speak out against Gertrude. And the members of two anti-crime groups, Protect the Innocent and Society's League Against Molestation, traveled to Indiana to oppose Gertrude's parole and support the Likens family. So over the course of 2 months, the groups collected 4,500 signatures from the citizens of Indiana demanding that Gertrude be kept behind bars. And in spite of this, she was granted parole.
What?
Yeah, she was granted parole. And during the hearing, she gave this confession. I'm not really sure what role I had in it because I was on drugs. I never really knew her. I take full responsibility for whatever happened to Sylvia. Sorry?
That is, oh my gosh, I can't. Yeah,
I know.
Can't.
I know. So she walked out of prison December 4th, 1985. And then she traveled to Ohio. I'm sorry, Iowa. I literally read Iowa and said Ohio. I don't know what's wrong with me. And she changed her name, because, you know, they can do that, to Nadine von Fossen. And the fates of her other children remains largely unknown. However, she died of lung cancer in 1990. So,
wow.
We were never alive at the same time as her. Thank God.
Yeah, thank goodness.
So Paula had moved to Iowa, and she had started the new identity, to which she had become the new, like, a school teacher there. There are some claims that she is still alive and lives in a farm somewhere outside the Iowa countryside. So Stephanie also became a school teacher and assumed a new name. And John changed his name to John Blake and worked as a truck driver before becoming a real estate agent and a lay minister. Yeah. Huh. So he was never arrested again, and he got married and had three children and lived in anonymity. I can never say that word. Before surfacing briefly in 1998 in the wake of the Jonesboro massacre, in order to speak for the first time about the Likens murder, saying that he took full responsibility for his role in the murder and that a harsher sentence would have been more just. You know, he says that, but I bet anything that if he were still in prison, he would not be happy about it.
Oh, yeah.
So, that is the absolutely horrifying and terrifying case of Sylvia Likens.
Oh my gosh, this is horrible, Emily.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh.
It's unfortunately something that happens to people, which is why I felt like it was important to talk about, because this happens. Yeah. It's no, this terrifying.
This is definitely one of those cases where you're like, I mean, we've said it before, this can't be real. But yeah. People actually are insane. So...
Absolutely. Like, and the fact that, like, everyone in this neighborhood was like, yeah, this is fine. I'm going to go watch this girl get beat up. This is totally fine. Like,
yeah, like, what? I would be very concerned if something was going on in my neighborhood, and I'm like, ooh, what is it? And then I go over there, and it's that? What?
Yeah, like, even with the neighbor, Phyllis, and she was just like, oh, yeah, I saw, like, they have a black eye, and she's the one that did it. Like,
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, that's, like, okay? Like, you don't need to call the police about that? Okay.
This,
yeah.
So messed up. I don't understand.
I know. It's
how
this is, like, the worst.
So cruel.
I don't understand. And it makes it so much worse knowing that, I mean, she did nothing wrong. I mean, of course, she did nothing wrong. And also, it wasn't just one person who was doing this to her. It was a whole group of people who were torturing her.
It's crazy to think how one person can influence so many to do something so bad.
I know, I agree.
Right? Like,
I don't understand.
I don't really know what, like, would have possessed these kids to just follow these orders, but right. Maybe they were also scared of her. Because, I mean, I would be scared.
Oh, like, yeah, no, I would be too.
But then again, I also wouldn't do that. I would probably just call 911.
Sure.
If this random lady went up to me and was like, hey, come abuse her for a nickel, I would be like,
No thanks. I'm okay.
Like,
yeah. That's genuinely so the most horrifying part is how many people were doing it. And the fact that they were like children, too. Like, I'm sorry. What? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this, guys. Once again, sorry for my laughter. This is just me in shock.
Uncomfortable and sad.
People can be, and yes, and uncomfortable. And I hope you know I was speechless throughout the majority of this because I was crying and also very concerned about how this even happened. But yeah, that was very, very interesting. Wow. I still just can't believe it's real. But like,
I know.
That's crazy. That's absolutely insane.
It's so insane.
Well, we hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I'm definitely gonna go like watch SpongeBob or something.
Yeah, no, I mean, me too.
I need some serotonin now. That
you need a palate cleanser.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh, let's do a palate cleanser. Wait.
Ooh, okay. We haven't done one of those in a while.
I don't think we've needed to do one of those in a while.
That's very
true. I mean, no, we did need to, but we just have not. Okay, let's see.
I have a few cat jokes.
Ah, please, give me those. I can't find anything good.
Okay, these are also random, so I don't know. Okay. Why can't cats play poker in the jungle?
Oh, okay. Because they're a cheetah? Is that what the answer is?
Too many cheetahs!
Hey! Close.
How does a cat sing scales?
Oh, shoot. I should know this one.
It's honestly not even that funny.
Is it not? Okay, what is it?
It says do re meow.
Ew, okay, no.
That was so bad. It was funny. Like that.
You're laughing way too hard about it.
That's what made it funny though.
Yeah.
Okay, ooh, okay. What do cats use to make coffee?
Coffee meows? I don't know.
Yours is funnier than the percolator.
Ew.
Yeah, that one doesn't make sense. These aren't even good. You made me laugh harder than these did.
It would make you laugh harder than bad cat
puns. Yeah, these horrible cat puns.
Wow, you're so kind.
I feel like, I don't know. Is your palate cleansed yet?
I'm cleansed. I'm all right.
Okay, good. Then we can quit these bad cat puns.
Okay.
Thank you guys so much for listening. It looks like we actually have an hour-long episode today, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Instagram for all of the updates at
Horror Slumber Party Podcast.
And Twitter.
Party_horror.
And also email us, you know, your input and any stories that you have. Hopefully not true crime. I'm talking more about paranormal activity. but yes. Email us at
horrorslumberparty@gmail.com.
And that's about it. Also check out our merch on Redbubble. The link
will be down below.
Yes, down below and in our bio on Instagram. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for listening. We love you. Good night and scary dreams.